This is Day to Day from NPR News. I'm Alex Chadwick. In Washington, Congress is debating a law to remove legal rights that the Supreme Court granted last year to 500 war on terror detainees held at Guantanamo Bay and elsewhere. The court ruled the prisoners should have access to American courts. The Senate has already passed a measure to change that. Since the court decision 18 months ago, civilian lawyers have helped about 200 of the prisoners at Guantanamo, where very few outsiders go. A few months ago, Marion McCune of member station WNYC asked two New York attorneys to carry a recorder with them as they worked, and here is the first of three reports.
This is Doug. I wanted to briefly introduce our clients, Ali Ahmed Mohammed Al-Razahi. Khaled Ahmed Qas.
Douglas Cox and Sarah Havens took on 11 Yemeni detainees, more by accident than as part of some political mission. They were just a few years out of law school, toiling over international business contracts in the posh law offices of Allen and Overy. When the firm dedicated a team of attorneys to the cause, Cox and Havens were invited to join partly because they both speak some Arabic. Doug Cox learned it as a linguist in the army, Havens as an exchange student in Cairo.
The trip to Guantanamo Bay takes roughly 3 hours. The route that they take is circuitous in order to avoid Cuban airspace.
I think when we took on the case, we assumed the worst, that they had been, you know, fighting U.S. troops or that they had been involved in planning terrorist attacks. We assumed all of these awful things, saying, okay, even truly horrible people deserve attorneys and deserve a trial.
When the Bush administration first brought the detainees to Guantanamo, officials argued they did not have the right to attorneys or traditional trials. Legal challenges forced the government to defend its policy in court.
Over 10,000 American troops are in Afghanistan today in response to a virtually unanimous congressional declaration of an unusual and extraordinary threat to our national security.
Solicitor General Theodore Olson told Supreme Court justices the detainees were unlawful combatants, captured on the battlefield and held on foreign soil. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld reiterated at a press conference last June that the extraordinary threat terrorists pose calls for extraordinary measures, and that the rules that govern criminals or formal prisoners of war do not apply.
The kind of people held at Guantanamo include terrorist trainers, bomb makers, extremist recruiters and financiers, bodyguards of Osama bin Laden, and would-be suicide bombers. They are not common car thieves.
But the courts have repeatedly rejected the government's Guantanamo policies, and over the past year and a half, federal judges have forced the Bush administration to open classified files and the prison at Guantanamo Bay to civilian attorneys.
This is Doug. The morning playing of the national anthem is about to begin.
The arrival of attorneys at Guantanamo Bay has sparked a kind of public relations war between the only parties allowed to review the classified evidence and visit with the detainees. Amidst criticism that detainees are not receiving due process, the Defense Department instituted a new internal review process that allows detainees to testify before a three-member military panel. Several dozen have been released. And Defense Secretary Rumsfeld says each year the military will reassess the remaining detainees' potential threat and intelligence value.
Our goal as a country is to detain as few people as is possible and is safe.
But the attorneys say much of the evidence the government is using to keep their clients confined is thin, contradictory, and obtained through the use of torture.
This is not to say that everyone who's down there is innocent, because I'm sure they're not, but the evidence that the government is relying on is, in many, many cases, really poor.
If people had an opportunity to learn a little bit about them and get to know them a bit, they would know that these are not the people that we should be worried about.
That's why, the attorneys say, they agreed to take a recorder along as they work. And though they have their own agenda, their accounts of visits to Guantanamo Bay offer some of the most intimate access publicly available to the prison and prisoners held there.
This is Sarah and Doug. We are preparing to head over to visit our clients, and we're putting together Middle Eastern suites for them to take.
We get them from this place called Shatila, which is in Dearborn, Michigan.
Guantanamo Bay is divided between the leeward side and the windward side. On the leeward side, there's a rather nice beach and a shockingly bad bar, the Clipper Club. Across the bay is where all of the main military personnel and their families are based. There is a Pizza Hut, there is now Starbucks, and there is, of course, McDonald's.
That's where the prison is as well. On their first visit with detainees, Haven says their clients were as wary as they were.
You're standing out in Camp Echo, and there's this brown building and three or four guards with shackles and keys. And, you know, the door swings open, and there is your client sitting at a table. And you're expecting this, you know, hardened terrorist to be staring back at you. And they're all skinny, tiny, very young people, and they look terrified.
Though U.S. officials have denied anything more than isolated cases of abuse, Haven says many of their clients have described physical and psychological abuse by interrogators.
A couple of them didn't believe that we were, in fact, lawyers. Some of them also have said, why should I work with you? This isn't going to make any difference. I mean, I've lost all hope at this point. Why should I bother myself?
The attorneys say building trust has been a challenge. They can only visit once every 6 weeks or so, and they are not allowed to reveal to the detainees any of the classified evidence against them. Their legal cases are mired in continuing court battles, so sometimes the attorneys say the most they can offer is a sympathetic ear and food to those not on hunger strike.
We've just been dropped off at the Starbucks.
Four small black coffees.
The feeling of shopping for someone who has been in confinement for 3 years and has been getting only the food put through the slot in their cage is a very surreal one.
Six small mochas.
Once, Haven says, one of her favorite clients, Ali Yahya Mahdi, admitted he'd really like to try an American pizza.
I had just, you know, set it on the table in front of Ali and opened it up, and his eyes just lit up. He was so excited to try the pizza. But there was a new commander, and she said, ma'am, I need you to remove the pizza from this place right now. I don't lose my temper very easily, but I stood up and I was like, you are under no circumstances taking this pizza away from my client. And we had to make phone calls all the way up the chain of command on a Saturday to talk about this pizza and how important it was to our attorney-client relationship. And so I get to walk in victorious, holding the pizza for Ali. And for him, who has just been completely subject to the whims of these people, to see his lawyer winning the right for whatever small thing it was, I think it made a really big difference for him. It's just like some decision being taken in his favor for a change.
Cox and Haven say Ali Yahya Mahdi is not among the scores of detainees now on a hunger strike to protest indefinite detention. They say the interrogations have subsided and Mahdi wears a white uniform in the prison's lowest security unit. But Mahdi's case is complex. Records of his military review show he admits to briefly attending a notorious al-Qaeda training camp. Though he and his attorneys say he never fought Americans or intended to, his military review says the classified evidence proves he's an al-Qaeda member. The public is left with the word of attorneys versus the word of the government. One side claims if a federal judge or jury could review the details of Mahdi's case, they would free him. The other, that by holding men like him, the U.S. has protected its citizens and gained vital intelligence about the terrorists who aim to harm Americans. For NPR News, I'm Marianne McCune.
And our Guantanamo Diary series continues tomorrow.